Thank you, Domitee. This is John Williams looking at producer Griffin Filipich. Joe Brand is still here, and so here we go all the way until 12 noon on WGN Radio. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio. That weather reminds us of fall, doesn't it? Joe Brand bumped into me in the hall, and he said, you know, this is one of those weekends where all of the Chicago teams are in play.
They're all relevant today is what it is. And, yeah, I mean, three playing in terms of WGN coverage, along with three playing total. I mean, the Cubs going for the division, the White Sox finishing off their season, the Blackhawks wrapping up their preseason. You've got a big Bears game tomorrow. It's a crazy time.
Northwestern football tonight. Mm-hmm. This afternoon against Michigan. That place is going to be packed. You'll see plenty of, what is it, blue and maize?
Maize and blue, yep.
Maize and blue, as well as the purple there. So hopefully the Wildcats will rise to the occasion. They've been kind of up and down. You know, they were a top 25 team in a lot of minds starting the season. But, you know, they'll need to prove that today, let's put it that way.
Well, and you know, they've kind of been notorious the past couple of years for collecting these big upsetting wins, and it's just been a matter of everything else in between that they've had problems with, and as of right now, losses to Duke and Akron is what has been those tough losses.
Joe, you're a smart guy. Griff's a smart guy.
Oh, thanks.
Domitee's a smart guy.
Debatable.
What is paragraph 5A of Senate Rule 26? Senate Rule 26, subparagraph 5-A. What is that?
I have a hint, so I'm going to abstain from answering this. I think I might know.
Well, you know, I know. I just think it's...
We were just talking about it.
We were just talking about it. Yeah, yeah. But I think it's fair to let you say it.
It's on. It's my favorite, really.
I was going to say not a fan. You know, I know what it is, and I'm not a fan.
It's the two-hour rule, isn't it, guys? The two-hour rule. And it restricts the time that a Senate committee can meet. They've had this rule for 70 years, and over the 70 years, it's evolved. Permission at times is given to go past the two-hour limit in a committee. Did you know that when Senate committees and subcommittees meet, they're not supposed to meet for more than 2 hours? There's a two-hour time limit. And sometimes they go over it. A lot of times what they'll do now is they'll invoke it. They'll say the two-hour limit is up when they want to delay something. If they want to protest the direction something is going, they can say, well, the two-hour time limit is up. So here is Chuck Grassley. Now, yesterday was the day that the Senate Judiciary Committee met, and that wasn't the day of the fireworks. That wasn't the Lindsey Graham show. This is the day that they were much more somber. The word comity returned on Friday, where comedy was the word on Thursday. So they were talking about what are we going to do about this Brett Kavanaugh vote. And Jeff Flake, the senator who's leaving from Arizona, and Senator Coons, who are pals, but one's very much the Democrat, one's very much the Republican. And isn't it nice that these people, despite what you heard on Thursday, can talk in a civil manner? So they retired from the chamber, went to an anteroom. Maybe they were at a nearby Starbucks, and they had a conversation. When they came back, we learned that Jeff Flake said, listen, we'll go ahead and ask you all to vote for Kavanaugh, and we'll put his name to the full Senate to be a Supreme Court justice. But let's have that 1 week where we will give the FBI a chance to further investigate the charges against him. So that was sort of the compromise that they reached. And there was some conversation about that. The other senators were just now being apprised, along with the rest of the American public, of what has just transpired. So they very quickly voted along party lines to pass the name Kavanaugh onto the full Senate. But rather than asking them to vote on Monday, they're going to ask for this delay. They're going to say, let's look a little further into it. But as they're sort of explaining that and wondering exactly how that's going to work, this is what happened.
Mr. Chairman.
Because of the two-hour rule, we're adjourned.
So Chuck Grassley, the chair, just kind of out of the blue says that. He just says, because of the two-hour rule, we're adjourned. All right, can you pick it up, Griff?
What?
The two-hour rule.
No vote.
Okay, so stop right there. So that's Dianne Feinstein, who's a ranking member on this committee. And Dianne Feinstein says, what? What? That, you know, there's not like a countdown clock. If it were soccer, we would know if we were in extra time. But just kind of out of the blue, quite literally, Grassley says, 2-hour rule, time's up. And Feinstein says, what? And then Grassley says, the 2-hour rule. We had to stop.
When did we do? Come in at noon?
No. Yeah, we did. Yeah, the 2-hour rule.
We came in at noon?
Yeah, we knew you were going. We had to get this all done by 2 o'clock.
Well, is it done? Is Flake's is it going to happen? Or did you cut off a vote?
No, we didn't have a motion in for us. This is all a gentleman and women's agreement.
Gentlemen and women's agreement.
I love that part. So he says, well, now, no, we didn't have anything signed and we didn't vote. But Senators Coons and Flake went off. They came up with an agreement. And now they've come back and we've all sort of shook on it. And it's a gentleman and woman's agreement. And Feinstein, you can just see her. You know, these people aren't as young as they once were. And she's kind of nodding her head, repeating it. A gentleman and woman's agreement. She's literally getting her head around what's being put before her. Okay, a gentleman and woman's agreement. So you guys have agreed on what? And everybody's now standing up and, you know, gathering their papers.
But I'm committed to Chuck.
Just let him say what he's committed to.
No. So stop it there, Greg. So Feinstein says, well, then let him say at least what we've committed to, what he's committed to, but it's the body, at least the subcommittee, the committee here. Let him say what we've committed to. And Grassley says, no. You know, he was a little heavy with the gavel at times, but none of this matters, incidentally. When he hit the gavel, the meeting is over. Now, this is them just talking, but their mics are still on, so we're all able to eavesdrop, if you will. And even this doesn't matter because, as you probably know, if they don't honor this agreement, Senator Flake has said, well, then a lot of our Republican votes are going to be in doubt, and they don't have enough margin, so they're probably going to get their way. The FBI is going to look into it in a week or less. And if there was some concern at the instant we're listening to this audio about whether or not we do or don't have an agreement, Flake is sitting there saying, if you guys don't do this, I won't vote with you. And so that's the end of the audio then, where they just all kind of walk away. But it was the most interesting and almost humorous in a dark sort of way thing. I do think we should have a 2-hour rule on a lot of things. I think that anything that takes longer than 2 hours to do is probably not being done well enough. It's taking too long. I have not been to the Broadway show, and I've been to them all. I've seen our Hamilton. I have not been to the Broadway show that I don't think couldn't be pared back to 2 hours. Movies that go longer than 2 hours work against themselves. Baseball games that go longer than 2.5 hours. Anything after 2 hours, you're asking for our patience.
Well, now you're hedging.
I did do that, didn't I?
You're like, baseball? Oh, wait. Every baseball game is over 2 hours.
Well, okay. But is my point true? Baseball games go too long.
Yeah, yes, but I think you're definitely right about movies, for sure.
Oh, thank you for that, because I didn't think you would agree with me on that.
Well, I mean, there's many great movies that are over 2 hours.
But they're swimming against the stream after the 121st minute.
As a general rule, you're right.
Thank you.
Don't push it.
I'm really going through a list of things. I think you're right. Nothing should last more than 2 hours.
The NFL restricts games to only one overtime. That's more a concern for injuries, but... you know, we're used to the cap.
What about 3-hour tours?
All right, we'll play that song in a minute. This is WGN. So about my idea, guys, that we should have a 2-hour limit on things in life. Oh, that's right. Well, let me finish this thought, Griff. Talk show hosts should have a 2-hour limit too, right? A lot of us. I think if somebody's going on long, we should all just be able to play this.
My passenger set sail that day for 3 hours.
I was thinking the gavel hits and Grassley says, I'm invoking the 2-hour time limit. But that's okay. This is for you, Joe Brand. Go ahead and hit the song, Griff.
3-hour tour.
I was just trying to think of things that are guaranteed to be longer than 2 hours. Yeah. And for some reason, that's what first popped into my head.
The three-hour tour. But I think, you know, if you're... if you have something going on at work, if you have something going on at home, if your parents are telling you to clean the basement or your kids are going on about something too long, just carry around a gavel, hit it, and say, that's it, 2 hour rule, time's up. And then you just, and then you walk away, and then you just walk.
Coincidentally, you are late for a break here as you talk about things going long.
I get that in my ear all the time. Really, producers, go ahead, Griff, hit the gavel if you want. I mean, I think they
That's just interesting, the topic that happens to be running long. It's just curious.
Okay, after the news, I want to tell you a little bit about something that is happening in Chicago starting tonight that will be the largest, most amazing display of its kind in the world. It is a permanent outdoor art exhibit which will be funded for or is planned on running for 30 years. It starts tonight, and you have never seen or heard anything like this. That's coming up after the news, for which we will be late. Thank you, Domitee. This is John Williams in the Allstate Skyline Studio, downtown Chicago. We do a show Saturdays here from 10 a.m. until 12 noon. I'm also on weekdays from 1 to 3. Our Mincing Rascals podcast was judged this year to be the best podcast in Chicago. We broadcast part of the podcast a little after 11 o'clock. You'll hear some conversation about the news of the day from a panel of experts. You said 77 in the end of that forecast somewhere. Is that what you're looking for? Monday, you
on
said?
On Monday, yes.
77, maybe even warmer than that in some of the suburbs. And I'm looking at my extended forecast because next Sunday is the Chicago Marathon. 77 is warmer than the runners would like it. They'd like it, kind of like it is now, 55 degrees. And this time, Sunday morning, they will be running. So hopefully the temperatures don't get too warm. Next Sunday, it's supposed to be 78 degrees for the marathon. Have you run the marathon before, Domitee?
I don't even run to, like, the bathroom. I can't. I don't run anywhere.
Griffin, how many marathons have you put in?
Zero.
Joe? It's kind of a thin... agile, athletic guy.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, also zero.
Yeah. John, you do marathons?
You know, people that ask that have run marathons. That's how you know if somebody's run a marathon. You don't even have to ask.
It's the Michael Scott happy birthday. Oh, I thought we had the same birthday.
Yeah. But I am reformed, so I'll say this. If you're thinking about running a marathon someday, you don't have to. I mean, except that you get to badger your friends and say, oh, really, you haven't? Other than that, there's no residual value, and it only hurts your knees.
How many have you done?
Oh, gosh, Griff, I don't know. It's four, and really it should be one. If you're going to run one, run one. Or run two half marathons on consecutive months or something.
Right, a half seems like a good, like extremely challenging but not insane.
Until you meet someone who's ran a full, because I'm going to be the guy and say, oh, you did a half. How cute.
That's adorable.
That's adorable.
You did a little half marathon.
Here's a half a clap.
Yeah. Really, I have never been more insufferable than I was when I was training for them or in that mode. And if I, you know, every now and then I think, what are some things I would do different in my life? I would not have run any more than one, and I probably shouldn't have run one. Okay, enough about that. So they have this. I had a conversation this week with a woman named Cynthia Noble, and she is an interesting business. She does boutique art tours in Chicago. Her company, which is Noble something or something Noble, Noble's her last name, but she does boutique art tours. So if your family, your reunion, your company, your convention wanted to do a kind of art tour in Chicago, she would organize one. It could be outdoor, it could be indoor. They could take you over to the Art Institute or to the Modern Art Museum, or, you know, you craft it and she would guide you. I think it's a really interesting little niche for her. But she is now also the executive director of Art on the Mart. I'll give you the website at the beginning and end of this conversation, artonthemart.com. It is the largest permanent digital art display in the world. that debuts tonight downtown on the Merchandise Mart. And this was part of our conversation from this week.
I'm the executive director of Art on the Mart, and as you mentioned, it's the largest permanent digital art projection in the world. I'm very delighted to be part of this project that will launch September 29th.
So something's going to be shined on the surface of the Merchandise Mart?
Yes, we are projecting artworks with no sponsorship or branding of any sort, so kind of pure art experience across over 2.5 acres of the river facade of the Mart, which is to help conceptualize that, that's larger than 2 football fields.
Yeah. And so is it laser light that's putting it on there? Because my understanding is that in order to accommodate for the various contours of the building and the distance and the so forth, you need very sharp, precise imagery. So how are we going to get all of that?
Yes, the technology is fascinating and absolutely up to date. It's we're using 34 projectors in partnership with our tech partner, Obscure Digital. And they are all being calibrated, and we're creating convergences to create projections that are over 1 million lumens, which is an incredible brightness. It will be the most current way of projecting works, and we're very pleased with the quality that we're able to project.
So the art that's going to be projected on the facade of the Merchandise Mart, will it be art that I'm familiar with, or are they all going to be original new works that I'll see?
What's wonderful about the works of art is that they're all extremely accessible. So we hope everyone will come with their families and friends to see 4 works that are created by artists, and also some content created by Obscura themselves. The artists include 2 brought to Art on the Mart from the Terra Foundation for American Art as part of their Art Design Chicago initiative in 2018.
So on any given night when I go to see this original art, I'm not going to see the Mona Lisa up there, right? I'm not going to see the Last Supper. Is that correct?
Not yet, but we do have the capability to project both new works and to use the proprietary software that that has been developed for this project in order to project familiar images as well if we choose to do so in the future.
You could do the Last Supper because that kind of runs the length of the building. You could see how that
would work. It's an excellent horizontal format, absolutely.
I guess that's what I'm thinking of.
The great thing about this project is that it will run for 30 years. We have a partnership with the city that will allow the project to endure, and so we'll have the opportunity to represent many voices and perspectives, and that's absolutely one of our objectives. That said, I want to encourage everyone to join us for the launch beginning at 6:30, because it will be a very unique time to see these artworks complete with audio. That will be the unique opportunity to also hear the works of art through temporary speakers that we're installing on Wacker Drive and in portions of the Riverwalk. So we encourage everyone to come for that particular event. And then going forward, that sound will be available through our website, artonthemart.com. But again, to come out on the 29th will be an even more immersive experience, and I think everyone will want to be part of this historic unveiling on the night itself.
No kidding. Will the imagery change on any given night, or if I go on the 29th, I'm going to see, or the 30th, say, I'll see that image, the one image, for the 2 hours that night? Does it, or does it rotate?
After the launch evening and after the launch weekend, I should say, we're going to run the works of art in a kind of loop over the 2 hours that we will project each evening.
Oh, so I would see multiple images over the 2 hours.
That's correct.
4? And
5, actually, because we're including the content produced by Obscure Digital as well, which is, it's fascinating. They're bringing a unique perspective as well. So this first group of projections that launches on Saturday, September 29th, will be on view through the end of this year, through the end of 2018.
So they change out every 20 or 30 minutes or so, a new one would come up, in other words, right?
The art projections, because they're works of art, they're each individual, and they have varying durations. And so they range from about 4 minutes to about 10 minutes per piece.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, you say they have durations. It's not video that I'm watching, though, is it?
The initial set of projections do happen to be videos. But another wonderful thing about this project is that we are not limited to video. So in the future, we might show still works that are animated through the proprietary software and filtered through giving treatments almost like filters that people are familiar with.
I understand that, but back to my, say, Last Supper then, I would imagine that just projected up on the side and it would be static. That's how I've been imagining this, but no, these images I'm going to see are fluid, huh? I'm going to be watching a video on the side of the Merchandise Mart.
There, there is quite a bit of motion, really? Particularly for the inaugural set of projections, but the possibilities are limitless. So there might be opportunities where we would want to hold an image for a duration as well.
Are you getting tired of everybody's bright ideas? Like they're saying, okay, here's what you should do.
But you know how they have show a whale breaching? Wouldn't it be cool to see a whale kind of swimming across, breaching above the merchandise mark, coming back down? Could they do something like that?
Absolutely. Again, the possibilities are limitless, and just the opposite. We're not at all tired by new ideas. In fact, we see this inaugural installation really as an invitation to other individual artists, to potential cultural organizational partners, et cetera, in order to dream with us, to imagine the potential of this transformative platform.
How's a good way to view it, though, right? I mean, are you going to have bleachers, or how do I watch this?
The best places to view will be on Upper Wacker Drive, directly in front of the Mart, or on the Riverwalk, because, in fact, we have the opportunity to even have some street closures, so pedestrians will be very comfortable to be able to be on Upper Wacker Drive, enjoying food trucks, enjoying a lantern procession from Luminite. On the 29th.
Thereafter, how will you recommend I view it?
I think it will shift a bit. I think some people will choose to enjoy it as a kind of program, to sit and take in the whole 2 hour run.
Along the riverfront,
and it's viewable beyond the bridges that flank the Mart as well. So beyond Wells to the east, and beyond Franklin to the west, there are many points in the loop where the projections are quite visible.
How about that? Doesn't that just sort of pique your interest a little bit? So I'm going to be watching it tonight at 6:30, and if you're not there this evening in the bleachers or along the she said they're going to close off some of the streets. I suppose that's Upper Wacker, across the river from the Merchandise Mart for a little while this evening. We'll see. But thereafter, I can just see somebody driving along Upper Wacker, State Street, one of those streets over there, and you look over and you go, what is that? Because you know the Merchandise Mart is this enormous building. As she said, it's 2.5 acres, the run of the facade. And all of a sudden you sort of see an image up there and it moves a little bit. So I'm hoping that it is, you know, fantastic as I'm hoping that it is. I'll report back to you, let's say Monday or next Saturday. I'll be there tonight. It's 10:51 on WGN. Speaking of interesting videos, there is a mashup, which is the hottest thing on the internet right now. Have you seen this? I'll tell you about this. I've posted this on my Facebook page in a minute. WGN Radio News in about 5 minutes. In the next half hour, the Mincing Rascals podcast, we broadcast part of it. The gang is talking about the Kavanaugh hearing and also the Jason Van Dyke trial. We post a web poll question. We call it the News Click. Every day we ask you to vote on something. What's your opinion? And yesterday we asked you if you think the idea of delaying the Kavanaugh hearing by a week for the FBI investigation is a good idea. So far, 90% of you are saying it's a good idea. 10% of you are saying not. And there's room for comments on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. So the whole world has just been wrapped up since Thursday in that hearing. And somebody did a mashup where they take the character Jules Winfield, played by Samuel L. Jackson in Pulp Fiction, and they imagined what it would be like if he was one of the senators or somehow made a cameo and he was questioning Brett Kavanaugh.
Now let me take a wild guess here. You're Brett, right?
Correct.
I thought so.
I got into Yale Law School.
Check out the big brain on Brad.
That's the number one law school in the country.
You're smart, that's right.
I had no connections there. I got there by busting my tail.
Looks like me and Vincent caught you boys at breakfast.
I still like beer.
You mind if I have some of your tasty beverage to wash this down?
Sometimes I had too many beers, but I did not drink beer to the point of blacking out. And I never sexually assaulted
anyone. Yes, you did. Yes, you did, Brett.
He is warm, friendly, unassuming. He's the nicest person.
I don't remember asking you a thing. Oh, I'm sorry. Did I break your concentration?
No, but we did have to do some editing there. I'll tell you that. I'm nervous playing that back just because I'm like, oh, I hope I caught that edit. I hope I got that edit.
Cut it pretty close, yeah.
Pretty close.
Yeah, that was good. That was going around on Twitter, and it was an example of a phenomenon where people just take the video and repost it and with the caption, who did this? Who made this?
Well, I'm wondering who did.
And if you do that, yeah, you're able to reap all the retweets and favorites for yourself people are, it's traffic to your post.
Oh, I didn't.
And technically you're not stealing it because you have acknowledged that you didn't make it, but oftentimes it seems like very little due diligence has been done to say, you, why don't you try to find out yourself
if you really want to know
before you repost it? But I saw it like in 15 different versions within 1 hour that were all like, who made this?
That's one of my pet peeves of
Twitter. I hate it so much.
It's so annoying.
I'm completely unaware of this phenomenon.
Drives me insane.
Or when people quote retweet something and basically say the same thing that the tweet is, then just retweet it.
It's so transparent. It's like, okay, I see.
Or just the fire emoji.
Yeah.
Just retweet it then. Just retweet it.
Yeah.
Well, I notice a lot the retweet if you agree. Right, which I suppose has the same sort of...
But people usually put that on something that they
originated.
Yeah, right? Yeah.
Okay, so we'll pause here for the news. I said I put that on my Facebook page. In fact, I retweeted it. I saw it and I retweeted it. I just hit retweet. I don't know if that makes me a bad person.
No, that's fine.
Okay.
It's okay. But you're not the one who took the video, posted it on your own thing, and said, hey, who did this?
You know, and I looked up just to make sure I got the name of the character that Samuel L. Jackson played. It's Jules Winfield. Winfield with two N's. I love it when characters have unique spellings of names that really don't matter in a movie. Why one N, why two? It's not an issue, but Jules is Winfield with two N's. Samuel L. Jackson. When you run through the cast of characters in that movie, it is such an interesting trip down memory lane. I watched a movie last night to sort of get away from it all. I'll review that in the next hour, and you will be glad when you heard my review. We'll also do the Mincing Rascals podcast broadcast, and Griff will walk us through the Vibe Score segment. We'll be catching up on a number of things before we wrap it up. Thank you, Doma T. This is John Williams. A few things we want to play back for you, as we always do on Saturdays at this time. It's the Mincing Rascals, judged the best podcast in the city of Chicago this year. It's a podcast we record here on Thursdays. We actually did it this week on Friday, and we broadcast part of it in this segment on Saturday. So we have two cuts for you. And then I want to play just one other little clip. At the end of the podcast each week, we do our recommendations, things we're reading, watching, listening to, eating or drinking that we think you might enjoy knowing about. And Patty Vasquez was part of the mix, and she told a little story. And at 6 o'clock this morning, I was still asleep. My phone goes bing, and it was my oldest son who said, I just listened to the podcast and Patty Vasquez made me cry because of a story she told about her family that takes a minute and a half to hear, and you'll hear that at the end of these two clips. So let's get started. The Mincing Rascals first talked about the Kavanaugh hearing on Thursday. The question was, do you believe her? Do you believe him? We start with Steve Bertrand, and a part of Brett Kavanaugh's testimony that Steve had a problem with.
And specifically, you know, we can talk about this Renata alumni, and he and a few of his buddies have in their yearbook that they were Renata alumni. And he told the senator who asked about that 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 was just because they were friends. And then he scolded the senator for impugning the reputation of this girl.
I don't know why you're bringing this up, frankly. Doing great harm to her by even bringing her name up here. Is really unfortunate.
Well, calling someone an alumnus in that way.
Well, implying what you're implying about.
By a number of your football friends at the time as boasting of sexual conduct. That's the reason that I'm bringing it up.
And yeah, no, it's false. You're implying that. Look what you're bringing up right now about her. Look what you're doing.
Chairman, I'm sorry. One of my best friends in high school was a girl named Linda. I would never have considered that I was a Linda alumni in high school. We all know what that implied. And for him to talk about it the way he did, I think was untruthful.
Isn't it consistent, though? I mean, it felt like in the testimony, his whole idea, the strategy was to get on a defensive and blame the questionnaire.
I mean, you could look also at the Ralphing or the FFFF or any of that stuff, or I'll have to piece together the night before.
He had time to come up with plausible explanations for things that are really vile.
So my point is, that's the easiest bridge to say this guy wasn't telling the truth. And if we have to choose one of them, that's how I choose.
I totally agree with that, and I think that Renata alumni thing is like the key to the entire day. If you think about that, he is lying about that. We know he's lying about it because, you know, common sense tells us that there's a array of lies he was telling about that yearbook. And the only reason is that he was adopting this Trumpian strategy of deny everything. And the thing is that the tactic he could have used is like, yeah, you know what? That was really childish of us. We didn't actually have sex with her, but we were like making fun of her. We weren't respecting her. It was a terrible thing we did. But instead, he's like, oh, because we danced with her and some people kissed her. And that, I mean, that was just, it was such a disgusting lie.
And the
such
cynicism an then.
Lie. And so everything else falls apart.
I agree. And that is what destroys everything else. And the cynicism of him saying, well, she signed a letter in support of me. If he reads the paper, and I'm sure he does, he knows that she essentially rescinded that because she didn't know that there was a Renata alumni club.
When she found out,
when she
said,
signed that letter.
The insinuation is horrible, hurtful, and simply untrue. I pray their daughters are never treated this way.
And yet he invokes her name as a supporter.
Okay, Patty, what are you thinking about?
Well, this is just specifically to this. I think that's why the call for an FBI investigation continues to ring true. He couldn't even answer that. You notice that every time they asked him whether it was Dick Durbin or if it was Kamala Harris.
All of them,
nine times he was asked,
right.
And he gave some long-winded answer. But if it's just the yearbook, even that, you could track down people who worked on the yearbook. You could cross-examine people and ask them, what were the intent? I mean, somebody remembers what they meant when they wrote those things. Or, you know, whether it comes to the people that were in the room, there's a lot of moments along the way because you've all said, someone's lying. All right, then, if left to anything else, then let's find out the truth.
Tell me if you agree with this, Justin. Steve said, you know, we have to figure out who's lying. I don't think we do. I think we'll never know.
Right.
And that fact alone disqualifies him from being a Supreme Court justice, fairly or otherwise. He's not entitled. You said this last week. This is not his job that he's losing.
And that was how he behaved when he sat down and gave his opening statements. He was belligerent. He, you know, and he has been a Republican operative for decades. So coming in, swinging about the Democrats, saying that they're getting, this is payback for the Clintons and the election in 2016. He, you know what, he leaked grand jury information when he was working for Ken Starr. That's a fact. He ran smear campaigns in the media trying to destroy them. So he, you know, but he came out, he showed himself to be wholly partisan.
See, we talked about this on the Steve Cochran show, too. This concept, that, and Eric has so eloquently wrote about it in the Chicago Tribune this week. It's not as if he does not get the nomination, the Democrats win and they get a liberal judge. There's a list of conservative judges that would go next. And that's what I why this guy? Why fall on the sword for this guy?
If women are liars and making things up like this, why didn't they do this to Gorsuch? Why didn't they do this to Roberts? Why?
Does everybody? It's too bad we don't have anybody here defending him or suggesting that she was less than truthful. Do you all think that Dr. Ford was categorically telling the truth?
It's to be able to paraphrase some of the people who texted in today to the show. They said it was he said, it was she said, and there's no evidence. So Ty goes to the justice. I don't know what the old saying is, but that's how they see it.
And that's why I began by saying, you know, she doesn't have a lot of evidence in her support. She has her memory, which I don't doubt, and I do believe it happened.
I totally believe that she was telling her truth, as people put it yesterday. I think that she completely 100% believes what she's saying. I'm not sure that Kavanaugh feels that way, but he might. It's possible that Kavanaugh did black out. Kavanaugh does forget these things, or that this kind of thing was so unimportant to him that he wouldn't have remembered it. But
I think he really believes what he was saying.
Right.
Keep going.
I think she believes what she was saying. I think that what we know about human memory, a lot of things line up with believing her, which is to say, why would she have made up Mark Judge being in the room? If she's going to make up a story, why do you put a witness there who's,
right.
who's a great friend of the guy you're accusing? Why would you do that?
And
it would be perfectly easy to say, well, I took a city bus. He
Judge signed a letter, Eric, saying,
let's bring him in front of the committee.
He suffers from alcoholism and depression, and that wouldn't be nice.
Sheldon Whitehouse said this morning, the Democrat from Rhode Island, he said, do you think that if there was a third person in the pantry off the Oval Office with Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky?
That's
no,
good.
Seriously, do you think that the Congress would have allowed for a lawyer's letter to suffice for his contribution?
All the witnesses, those letters that he was talking about, they were written by lawyers and signed by the client. Those were not their statements. They were crafted in a way that it couldn't come back to hurt them.
And they don't deny that it happened. They just say they don't have any memory of it.
Right.
Mark Judge now says he will cooperate with the FBI investigation. I don't know how much option he has, but he is going to be one of the people that they will talk to. Next, the gang talked about the Jason Van Dyke trial, which was all of our focus up until Thursday and continued through Thursday. They took a break on Friday. Saturday, Sunday, they'll be back at it on Monday. They expect that the trial will conclude this coming week. Wow, we'll wait on bated breath for that. The gang had a few things to say about the Van Dyke trial, and we'll get to that in a minute. Part two of the Mincing Rascals podcast, judge the best podcast in the city of Chicago. We do it on Thursdays. We dropped it Friday of this week, actually. And here are Justin Kaufman from WGN Radio. You hear him in the mornings with Steve Cochran, is talking about the defense in the Jason Van Dyke trial.
The defense seems to clearly be about discrediting Laquan McDonald's character and also showing that the use of deadly force in this case, the 16 shots, was defensible. Or in this case, how he was trained, that he followed the protocol as a police officer on what to do in a situation that is aggressive, where someone is attempting to attack a police officer.
Patty, do you think that the defense video they created helped, hurt, or was neutral?
The digital video that seemed to alter the angle from which the police officer shot. It looked as though like they were right almost in front of him. Was sort of surreal. And I don't know if they have the opportunity to sort of call somebody else and say, look, I mean, they showed that the shell casings weren't even lining up with the actual video.
Or they only showed five shots. Or doggone it, they put a hood on him in the video, and the hood was not up.
And they failed in the video, the animation, to show the moment in which Laquan McDonald would be aggressive that would cause a police officer to use deadly force. So that was the thing. Right. It almost backfired on them to be like, you could do
completely
all that, you could show all that stuff, but you never actually showed Laquan McDonald lunging at a police officer.
Sure. I think it was impactful to show, because I haven't been following it as closely as all of you have. I've seen the video, obviously, but when I saw that animation, I'm like, oh, he was closer than I thought. And even if that was
He's a lane of traffic away. He's like 13, 14 feet away.
He closed in from 40 feet to 13 feet when the bullet was fired.
He closed in the same way a car closes in on you when you're standing by a curb waiting to cross the street.
He got to 13 feet. I mean, that's...
And he's moving away. He's not moving toward him.
Right. Laterally, he was moving away.
I think you look at that video. I think the video backfired. If I'm a juror, I see that. I go, well, he's not making any aggressive motions. If anything, you see he's angling away from where the police are. He's trying to stay away from him. There's no real place for him to go because there's a fence right over there, right to his right. So he's kind of angling away from them. He's got to walk by them because they've gone up in front of him.
I'm not arguing with you.
No, I know you're not. I'm
just saying.
Start crying here.
Everybody focus on that video. Believe me. Everybody focus on the animation. But I'm surprised that the defense is really trying to desensitize 16 shots. That's what they're going for. They had somebody on who countered the medical examiner, talking that it was only two shots that's all you have to care about, the two shots. There was a lot of question about whether or not he was alive on the scene or dead. But just this idea that they're trying to desensitize to a juror that it was not a big deal that it was 16 shots.
That's remarkable. I agree.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I don't know if that's
going to
work.
And then he was going to reload, and that was also the way they're trained, was with the firearm.
This is late for me to introduce this in the conversation, but if you're just joining us, Laquan McDonald was a 17-year-old who 4 years ago was shot 16 times by a police officer who came upon him as he was walking down the street before a taser got there. This one rogue officer, Jason Van Dyke, shot him 16 times in 14 seconds. And Eric, you wrote that what may be impactful is his behavior in the past, years in the past or hours in the past, and that in Illinois we allow that kind of evidence. What was your take on how that was played?
Well, this is a Illinois Supreme Court case from 1984 called People v. Lynch. And in that case, it was a self-defense case, and the past acts of the people who were involved could be allowed in as evidence because that would help a finder of fact, a judge or a jury, decide whether it's more likely that one person was the aggressor than the other person. So there's like, it's because if you don't know what happened, you need to kind of know which account to believe. They're conflicting accounts. In this case, there really isn't a conflicting account as to what happened. We have the video to see what happened. So the idea that you could just muddy up Laquan McDonald and talk about, well, you know, 2 years earlier he was aggressive and belligerent with a juvenile court official, to me, it's irrelevant. Now, legally speaking, I think the judges probably had to let it in because, legally speaking, the jury is allowed to completely ignore that video. They don't have to even consider the video. That's one of the strange things about the law is the jurors can give any amount of weight they want to any evidence they want. So
he's got to let it in, because if Van Dyke is going to mount a self-defense case, then... But my feeling is the defense knows the jury's going to credit that video. What they want to do, I believe, is they want to make us think like, well, Laquan McDonald was just a bad guy. He was a crappy punk, and Jason Van Dyke did us a favor by killing him. Like, maybe he wasn't totally justified, but the city is better off without Jason Van Dyke, without Laquan McDonald. That's, I think that's the idea they're putting in their mind, which is like, no harm, no foul. That's... I mean, it sounds very cynical,
no, but
I think that's what's going on. Right. They're making Laquan McDonald as a bad guy who deserved to be killed, whether or not he was actually doing anything wrong.
With all of that, and I know we've talked about this, the implication then is that Officer Van Dyke is aware of that when he pulls
and he
up.
Wasn't, and he was not
so
aware
it just,
of it.
See, it's just so odd to me that his past behavior is relevant.
It gets to be in Illinois. Isn't that amazing what Eric Zorn said there? But that's his view on what they're trying to do with the jury. The full podcast is at WGNradio.com. We post it on my Facebook page, too, on social media. I'm WGN King John. Now, I told you that at the end, then, we do our recommendations, where we all say, here's something I think you would enjoy. And Patty Vasquez recommended a book. And before she told you the name of the book, or as she did, she said, here's a story that I can relate to relative to her recommendation. It was one of the sweetest, most heartfelt stories you'll ever hear. In 90 seconds, she told it, and we'll let her have her way. Let's do it right after the news. We'll pause here for that, and Patty will pick it up there. This is WGN. Thank you, Domitee. This is John Williams at the end of the Mincing Rascals podcast. You'll find it at WGNradio.com and on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John. We asked the gang to give us a recommendation. Patty Vasquez recommended a book. I told you I wanted you to hear her recommendation this week, and this is that.
You know, one of the great things about being at WGN Radio is that authors send us books. So this book is actually coming out on October 2nd. It's called What If This Were Enough? It's a collection of essays by Heather Havrilesky. I'm sure I'm mutilating her name. But it's really about how, you know, how we're pursuing happiness through consuming, you know, technology and travel. You know, I want to save money, take my kids to Disney World. And sort of these goals that we have. And what if you just took a step back and thought, you know, where I am is pretty darn good. And it was a lesson. The reason it struck a chord with me is because, you know, I have two boys, Griffin and Declan. Griffin is older than his brother by 2 years, and his younger brother has significant special needs. And when they were in grade school, they were only for 6 months were they able to go to school together. And the principal pulled me aside and told me how remarkable Griffin was. And in his 25 years, he'd never seen a kindergartner like Griffin. And I said, I know, Griffin is the best big brother Declan could have. And I really believe that. But when we got in the car, you know, because, and I always had felt like I burdened Griffin by having a second child with the special needs. He will never live independently. And Griffin looked really serious, and I said, sweetie, what's wrong? He goes, you didn't tell Principal Smith that Declan was the best little brother I could have. And this book reminded me of those kinds of lessons that Griffin has taught me. So I just was really struck by that. That's why I recommend this book. It has messages like that, like Griffin shares.
Griffin shares. That could be a saying or a thing. Thank you, Patty Vasquez. You can listen to her weeknights with Andrea Darlis on WGN Radio, and they're as good at night as she was on the podcast this week. That's good, Griff. We're ready. 3, 2, 1. I'm ready if you are. Hit it. Stay 2 cars behind and tell her, don't be so obvious. Saturdays, we hit some music about this time. Griffin Engineers. Let's go to your place, and if he say yeah, then we meet him there. She feed him lies with his silver. What are we listening to, Griff? She just wanna share.
This is a song called Mona Lisa by Lil Wayne that just came out on his album, The Carter Five. I go and tell my people, and they already know it. And then I call Liz, and she say, you coming over. I said, good girl, just remember what I told you. She gave me the salute. I said, girl, you're a soldier. We waiting outside. you're getting dropped in kind of in the middle of a story, but this is what I like about this song is that it's Lil Wayne indulging in some like storytelling kind of rap, which he's not really known for.
So you want us to rate on a scale of 1 to 100?
Yeah, well, it's I guess. Yeah, yeah.
What's the matter, Griff? You seem troubled by choice there.
Sometimes I feel constricted by what I can play and the kind of reaction that I know I'll get from you. So I'm already feeling defensive of my choice here.
Mm-hmm.
Because this is a big deal.
What's a big deal?
The Carter Five, the album that Lil Wayne just put out. It's a big deal.
Yeah, right. And
this is the standout track that I think a lot of people are talking about. It's the one that caught my ear on an initial listen.
I'll help you out, Griff. It features Pulitzer Prize winner. Is it Pulitzer? Kendrick Lamar.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar is on that record, and it tells a full story. And this is significant because Lil Wayne was in a label dispute, and this album has taken several years to come out. He finally resolved the dispute. And in hip hop years, he's ancient now. He's like in his mid 30s, which means he's a senior citizen. And so, you know, we like senior citizen rap music these days. So it means a lot. Well,
and we're about 10 years removed from the Carter III, which was like the biggest, maybe the biggest rap album of the decade. It's up there for sure. And
so this is our Paul McCartney just dropped a new album. Basically, you know, this is what this is our high school years relived.
So do you think that's an interest? Is that a fair reference point for me? Like, this is the Paul McCartney of the hip hop youth era. I mean, because you notice I'm not judging or disparaging right now. I'm trying to be open and sort of appreciate the world that you're introducing me to a little bit here. You do see that, right?
I appreciate thank you very much, and I do appreciate that.
We feel you're judging telepathically, though.
Oh, I totally am, but I'm, you know, trying not to at least verbalize it. Let's go to Joe Brandon Sports. Joe, go.
Whenever I listen to rap, I just feel like the guy from Office Space who's in his car rapping and then, you know, rolls up the window when someone's coming by because he's just afraid people are going to see him. I enjoy the 90s upbeat hip-hop. It's tough for me to enjoy a rap song that's kind of low-key like this one. I don't hate it. I'm sure if I read the lyrics and really fully indulged into it, I could maybe appreciate it more. But I'm going to have to go and give it a 70.
Yeah, I'll give it a 70 with Joe. You know, my problem is, and I'll be honest about it, I know it's an art form, and I know it's legitimate, and it's important, and it's just not accessible to me. So there's some hip-hop or younger artists who I do enjoy, and they're a little out of my sweet spot. Literally, I've been a Kanye West fan, Griff. I mean, I know he's a different animal these days, but there are guys like him who I go, I get it, I like it, this is nice music. But I'm going to go with Joe and just roll up the window at 70.
Yeah, no, I get it. And it's funny that you mentioned Kanye, because he's coming out with an album later this week. And between the two of them, I think
he's on SNL tonight, right? Kanye?
Yes. Between the two of them, I think they really defined what popular rap, at least for the past 10 years, has been. And with this album and Kanye's last album, this new one coming up, some people feel like, wow, Lil Wayne and Kanye are both like really over the hill, either in some of the messaging that they're doing or just the sound of the music, and it's a little sad.
I know you lose your mind when we talk about Kanye West, but wasn't he seen this week, or isn't there a picture out there of him with a MAGA hat on and also a Colin Kaepernick t-shirt?
Which in my world is
kind of mixed messages, but he's a complicated person, so he gets to be whatever he wants. He's on SNL tonight. He's not the host. He's just a musical artist, but I'm sure we'll get something memorable from him. Who's hosting SNL tonight, by the way?
Adam Driver. So, Domati, what's your score for this song and album?
Well, I was going to give it a 70.
No,
but
don't do that. Don't do that.
But yeah, but you guys gave it a reluctant 70, so 70 is like the new zero. So I'll give it I'll give it a 95.
Oh, wow. Where are you, Griff?
Well, I'm pretty down on the album, but I have to say this song caught my ear, and I've been listening to it a little bit. It's pretty fun. So for the song, I go like 85.
And really quick, Griffin, John, it's 24 tracks long. So your statement, John, about things being too long.
2 hours?
Yeah.
Some stuff gets too long. The name of the album, the name of the artist, Griff, is?
The Carter Five by Lil Wayne.
Okay, here's one for you guys to rate for me. The Queen of England, you know how she does that wave back and forth when she goes by in a Rolls Royce or when she's sitting in the window and she waves back and forth? You know the Queen wave, right?
Mm-hmm.
She has a fake hand-waving machine. It's not known if she uses it, but the Queen has a fake hand-waving machine. What do you think of the Queen not waving to you when she goes by, but she's just got it held up to the window and it's waving for her?
Wait, so you're talking like a rubber arm?
It's a wooden hand with a glove on it, and it goes back and forth, and then she doesn't have to hold her hand up for a few hours as she goes around or wherever she is. The fake Queen hand-waving machine. If the Queen was doing that, Griff, are you okay with that? Is that disingenuous? Is that a fake hand wave? Your thoughts?
I'm fine with that.
I'm 100% okay with it. Domati, go.
It's genius 100.
Yeah, it's clever. What a fun gadget. Joe Brand.
I mean, I know she's an older woman, and you know, you got to give her a break every once in a while, but that, I feel like that's equivalent to going to a concert and the person's lip singing. I mean, I'm there to see the queen wave at me, not to have an artificial arm give me a turn.
You know, I'm not going to change my vote, but I think that's a brilliant analysis, Joe. That's inspired, my friend. All right, Joe Brand, 1 to 100, what are we rating from you?
Yeah, so this week, the Philadelphia Flyers came out with their mascot. They never had a mascot before. His name is Gritty, and he's this orange creature with these big, bulging, round, googly eyes, some fur, almost like a lion's mane across his head with just orange fur hanging out. And I honestly liked it. He's got this big belly that he's able to jiggle around. His head kind of bobbles, too. But the internet just took off on it. They put him with a Gatorade bottle, champagne flowing out to his rear end like the Kim Kardashian image that broke the internet a couple years ago. A lot of people are going the devilish route where they've got him under a sewer, the It clown, trying to lure people in. The best one is he's got two severed Sesame Street heads in each hand.
Oh, no.
It's gotten a little bit morbid, but it is pretty humorous. I don't know. I honestly was a fan of it. Philly has one of the best mascots ever in the Philly Fanatic for the baseball team.
Yeah.
I like the mascot. I give him an 80%.
Well, it seems to be working, right? I mean, if nothing else, to put the Flyers on the map in Chicago for 5 minutes.
Well, yeah. Remember when Clark the Cub came out and everyone kept talking about how he didn't have any pants and there was all these jokes about Clark the Cub, and now nobody even thinks about that anymore.
I don't even know. The Cubs have a mascot named Clark?
Oh, yeah. He came out a couple years ago. Clark the Cub.
And is he a blue, like...
He's not a blue. No, it's a brown cub with a backward Cubs hat, a white pinstripe jersey,
and Clark, huh?
And no pants.
Okay, I'm with Joe Brand on this. 83. Griffin, go.
100. I love Gritty. Yeah, we love Gritty.
What? 40? This thing is scaring me.
This is he strikes fear in the heart of his opponents.
I see. I mean, Halloween colors, no pants.
He's not a welcome ambassador. He's there to intimidate the other team, Domati. Come on.
Okay, well.
An LA comedian tweeted, "When there's no room left in hell, the dead will walk the earth."
Mission accomplished.
There's a storied tradition of mascots and cartoon bears not wearing pants.
Right.
If you were mad about that,
you didn't like Winnie the Pooh.
You've got a lot to reckon.
Yeah,
It's not just Clark or Gritty.
Okay, fine. Domati Pongo, what are you looking at?
Malia Obama is in a music video by an indie band called The New Dakotas. And she appeared in there just wearing a Scully cap and a hoodie and was singing on a microphone. Looks like she's having fun. The story breaks. All of a sudden, a new cut of the video comes out and she is no longer in it. 100 is... This is wonderful. She's having fun. Let kids be kids. Zero is, oh my God, that is inappropriate. The first daughter should not be gallivanting in music videos.
Yeah, well, you'll always be the first daughter. I mean, that baggage is with you, and you didn't ask for it, but it's there, and I think you need to respect that. But I haven't seen the video, so I don't know if it's being disrespectful in some way.
It's not. I'm 100. It's fine. It's fun. And she plays a little harmonica too, right? I actually haven't watched the full video, but I saw the clips of her that were then later excerpted out.
Why did they get excerpted out?
I don't know.
I'll bet your mama bear got a hold of that. And if you think Barack was tough, and I don't know if he was, I don't know what kind of a father he was, but I'll bet you Michelle will brook no nonsense. I'll bet she just said,
even strike me as not... Well, as someone who was in a college band, we would have loved this kind of press.
Oh, it's good for the band.
It's great for the...
But you're saying...
She's friends with the guys in the band. And, it's just kind of... And she's also a film student, right? Like,
here's what's
a video. Maybe she worked behind the scenes. I don't know. But it's nothing.
It got eliminated for a reason. Do you want Malia Obama in your video or not? Yes, you do. It's not there now. Why not? It's because Michelle called somebody in Secret Service, and they paid a call to these guys, and they said, your life will be different if Malia doesn't come out, and she was excised from the video. Final answer.
Well, I don't disagree with you on what probably happened, but I think it's silly.
Necessary.
Yeah, unnecessary. Yeah.
Joe, do you have anything to say about this story?
I'm definitely on Griff's side with this. I always enjoy when famous people or, you know, esteemed images are and their children kind of take a different route. Isn't Rob Schneider's daughter a really good singer?
She had a big hit a couple years
ago. Yeah, yeah. I really enjoy that because you see the kid kind of taking on their own personality and doing their own talent. So I enjoy when things like that happen.
I'll say this about the Obamas, though. When you consider the spotlight they were in and how exceptional their family was in so many ways, the trouble they didn't get into, that was just such a good family for America. You may not be a fan of the president, I get that, but I think they really comported themselves pretty well then and now. And if we get a video of one of those girls smoking some reefer at a music concert or Michelle doing something that you wish she didn't do, I think you can. I think they've got some room.
Yeah.
The Obamas do.
Such a classy family. A history of being a classy family. So let her live. Don't treat the kids like Bubble Boy. You got to let her live. You got to let her live a little bit.
Yeah. But do we think she was actually playing harmonica? The real scandal. <That's> the real-
By the way, we talked about this week. I don't know if it was a news click because there were real stories in the news this week, but where are we all on Dunkin' Donuts dropping the word donuts and just going with Dunkin'? I'm not a fan. Donuts is one of my favorite words, and they sell donuts, and it's okay to be a donut company. I wish they'd, if they say we're going to shorten it, I would have said, okay, we're donuts now. No, we're Dunkin'. Joe Brand, your thoughts?
Put me on the spot. I do enjoy the simplicity that branding has kind of taken its way on these past couple of years. I mean,
KFC,
Domino's went from Domino's Pizza to just Domino's. Again, a lot of people just call Dunkin' Donuts Dunkin'. I get it, though. Donuts are their staple. That's tough.
60% of their sales are coffee, actually, or beverages. So, but it's not coffee.
Right.
Griffin, your thoughts?
I don't know. It's tough. I go to Dunkin'. Notable silence there. I'm not going to say.
I'm holding a Dunkin' cup right now.
I go there very often, and I always liked abbreviating it to Dunkin' from Dunkin' Donuts because it made me feel like a real regular, real cool guy. And now I can't because now what am I supposed to do now?
Now you won't be cool. You'll be using the standard name.
The people, Dunk. And I wasn't just the only one that thought that. Everybody thought, wow, he's a cool guy for not saying. And now I can't do that. I don't know. It's too bad.
Wow. I hadn't thought about how it's impacted you personally, Griff. Thank you for sharing.
Thank you.
It's 11:54. Patty's around the corner. We'll see what's coming up next.